Hare Krishna Maharaj, Hare Krishna Matsudi.
Hare Krishna.
Hello, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna to everyone else who joined today's seminar. So perhaps some more will come in. But we thought that we could start off some questions regarding yesterday's seminar. And
okay.
Maybe start off with mentioning that today's topic would be community development based on the principle of pure devotional service. And also just to start that discussion, I was hoping Maharaj Lalitana Prabhu, he supposed that you could give some case studies. For example, Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, and others that have been walking in that direction.
Do we have other questions from yesterday or no?
Any questions from yesterday? Any of the participants?
No.
We discussed it quite a lot, and like points were very relevant and were very much appreciated.
Okay.
But no, I don't think it doesn't seem that there's any questions. So maybe
okay.
Pure devotional service.
Okay. So, see, is that Krishna, he is who he is. He's the Supreme Lord. He's a person. Because he's a person, then everything, that's part of him, which means everything is also based on the personal. So his expansions then through his energies. So you have your main energies. So the Icha Shakti means desire, you know, or like that's, then that is, Krishna controls that. Then Kriya means activities that are done, the mechanics of those activities. That's controlled by Balaram. And then the Jnana Shakti, or the existence of things and the basic, you could say, identities and all that, and how you establish yourself in relationship to Krishna. Then that's controlled by Vasudeva. So in this, then we see is that the primary aspect is the Icha Shakti. And the Jnana and Kriyas, they're there to support, to give a background to express. So the idea being that, yes, so then Krishna and his energies, and they interact based on this natural relationship, this natural affection. But now to express relationship, you have an activity. And to have an activity, there's an identity and an attitude. So the identity, the knowledge you have, the skills you have, the identity you have, the how you apply that gets particular results, those are all supportive of relationships. Of course, that's not very well known in today's world, in the contemporary society. But that's actually what it's for, and that's what people are looking for. If you put knowledge and skills above relationships, relationship meaning the exchange, not just the actual, you know, legalistic aspect, but the experience of relationships. If you put the knowledge and skills above that, then yes, you can progress in your knowledge and skills. You can get all kinds of results, nice facilities, but all those facilities will be made out of dead matter. And they will not reciprocate with you in a relationship. And the problem is this living entity being the soul, the soul's only interest is in consciousness. Right? We identify with the body. So of course, yes, we want things connected with the body. But what's the point of that? Somebody wants a fancy car just to have the car, or for relationships with other people. They want a house just to have a house, or for relationships. They want positions. They want authority. They want money. They want influence. They want fame because of relationships. So this gets put on the side but that's actually the only motive why anybody does it. And we see is because it's not done in connection with Krishna, the ultimate position of relationship, the natural position of relationship of the living entity, then every living entity is dissatisfied and is looking for something more. So after they try one set of external facilities and activities, and then they'll move to the next and move to the next and move to the next. And like that, 8,400,000 species, 14 planetary systems. You have, you know, down at the beach, you have on the land, you have in the mountains, you have in the sky, you have in the water. And then like that, then the living entity just spends their time moving around, never being satisfied. So this then becomes a very important, this particular element becomes very important to be able to understand and identify pure devotional service. So in the spiritual world, you have pure devotional service because all the knowledge and skills and activities and results that they get from their endeavors are only to please Krishna. Endeavors means engaging the mind and senses. The only purpose of that is to create opportunities to express love for Krishna. That's the only purpose for it. So the living entities in the material world, since Krishna is not the par, the Ichashakti is not about pleasing Krishna's desire, then it becomes about pleasing our own desire. And so then that's just taken as a granted. So then how do we do that? Since all these knowledge and skills are simply a medium for expressing love for Krishna. If you take Krishna out of it, it's just the knowledge and skills themselves and the importance of that that becomes prominent. So then you have that people endeavor for these knowledge and skills. And by gaining them, then they consider themselves happy. But then they are never fully satisfied. So this is a big difficulty that the living entity will have. The living entity will have this problem because he will be thinking that I have money, I have position, I have, you know, any of these six opulences of Krishna. But having them, somehow or another, it's not enough. So they're looking for something else. And when that becomes, they become tired of that and frustrated with that, then they go for liberation. Okay, all this is useless. So therefore, we go for getting rid of existence, right? Existence, I'm supposed to be happy in existence on this material platform. It's not working. Therefore, I turn to the spiritual, means getting rid of existence, right? So therefore, your two paths of karma and jnana arise. The idea I can be happy by the knowledge and skills. Then with time I find I can't be happy with the knowledge and skills. Then I go for liberation or nothingness. So you always see these go hand in hand. You see the more that people become materialistic, you see the more that this impersonalistic philosophies and Buddhism that are becoming more prominent. As people have less and less faith in religion and that, you don't see that happening with Buddhism. Why? Because Buddhism means nothingness. You know, what's the dislike? There's nothing. Right? So therefore, we see is that people have to appreciate that Krishna interacts with the devotees and the devotion, the love between them in exchange, but there's a medium for that. Right? So that's what you see is what's described in Nectar Devotion, that let's say that the cowherd boys, so they have a rati or a particular attraction towards Krishna. And so in that attraction and certain aspects of Krishna, you know, his flute, how his age, his clothes, you know, how he, his bugle, his, how he wrestles and fights, his joking words. And from that, that creates a reaction in them or an anubhava. Of, then they want to wrestle and fight with Krishna. They want to, you know, they want to sing. They want to do services for Krishna and all these things. And then that creates other ecstatic symptoms like the Sattvika Bhavas and the Vyabhichari Bhavas and all that. So the whole point is that rasa is the combination of all this. Just that I like Krishna, that's called rati, but it's not called rasa. Rasa is experienced only when there's exchange. So there must be something to be used as exchange. So then Krishna being who he is and being perfect, then he being rasa, then within his, with all his energies, then they have the perfect forms and activities and results and knowledge that is perfect for going with that rasa. You know, just like you have anything, let's say you want to have a picnic. Where do we have a picnic? We go out and sit down in the middle of the highway? No. We go and sit down in the middle of a parking lot? No. We go sit down, let's say, in the middle of the school gym, you know, in the basketball court? No. You want to go out into some nice, pleasant kind of, you know, like garden or park-like or natural setting, that there's some open area, you know, some nice sun, some nice flowers, trees, you know, some kind of thing that it's natural, it's simple, but it feels safe. And in that thing, then you put down your blanket, you bring out your basket, you get out all the different things, the friends sit around, and then they eat, right? So the whole point is for picnic, then it's, what do you call it? It goes in a natural setting. And the mood, is it formal? Everybody comes in their three-piece suits and tuxedos and top hats and Oxford shoes like that? No. They say natural kind of more casual kind of clothes. They all sit down. Do they sit very formally, all that? You know, everybody's in lotus asana and all that. No. They just sit, relax, lean, this, that. So there's natural forms and activities. And when they eat, they just sit down and eat. And then when they finish, they pack it up and leave. No, you sit, you talk, you joke, you know, eat a little bit, they'll play games, they'll do things like that. You understand? So that means for, just for having a picnic, enjoying the picnic, then there's a whole thing that goes with that picnic. That's how it works. So that's the whole point, is for tasting that friendship rasa. Means the rati is there, but now for it to be rasa, then you need that whole environment with the activities that go with it. Therefore, then the Vrindavan forest, then they go out, the Jamuna River is there, the cows are there, you know, all these different trees and different things that are there in the forest, plenty of space so they can run around, you know, and they can yell, they can scream, they can do all the things that they like to do, and they're not going to disturb any of the elders or anything like that. And so it's the perfect environment. The activities perfectly match. So that's the whole thing. So we can see Mother Jashoda. Now she's just going to be out there in that forest and everything. No, she has a very nice house with all facilities. Nanda Bhavan has 100 rooms in it. And in that, then she has all the perfection for her kitchen, her godowns, the place for serving prasad, places for Krishna to rest, for him to bathe, for him to dress. You know, for him to be entertained in the evening with music and dance. You know, all these different things are all there so she can arrange. So that's the perfect environment, the perfect activities for Mother Jashoda to express her rati or her attraction to Krishna. Right? And the gopis, and again, now we're back out into the forest. Right? Just because that's why it's parakia. So therefore you want to be away. You want to make sure that no one's going to come around and disturb. And that, in that natural environment, then it becomes very wonderful because it's all the trees and the lotus flowers and the moon and, you know, all the different things that can add to the romantic environment. Does this make sense? So, therefore, the knowledge and skills that one has, they're only for the purpose to express devotion. That's the only purpose. So in the beginning, yes, because we're not used to that. We've come to the material world because we've given up the idea to please Krishna. And we use the knowledge and skills for our own purpose. So if I get a result, since in the material world, you don't have actually proper taste and all that. You're just dealing with a reflection of the real taste. Therefore, then it's if I have a house, then I have potential for being happy and enjoying interactions. And a bigger house with more facilities, more opportunity. Have a pool in the backyard, You know, I have whatever it is. I have my cars. I have this, that. More things I have, the more opportunities for expressing relationships. But the problem is since I take it that having those things is the happiness, I won't get happiness. I won't find it because that's not where it is. Does that make sense? So the Icha Shakti, that's in the same position as the Hladini Shakti. All right? So the different anubhavas and that will be gained from the performance of devotional service that you're going to see in Hladini or the pleasure potency. Chit potency will be the activities. Right? The sat potency or eternal, that will be the existence, the knowledge, the identity. You know, the technical skills. Right? So the sat chit ananda, because Krishna is sat chit ananda, therefore everything is based on this principle, sat chit ananda. That's why Lord Chaitanya in the Chaitanya Charitamrita many times points out that sambandha abhideyam prayojana, that is the knowledge of the Veda. Everything fits into these three categories. Every bit of knowledge that's given there is simply delineation of these three areas. Why? Because it comes to Krishna. He's sat chit ananda. Therefore, everything is going to be expanded from those principles. He's conscious. Therefore, everything expands. It's going to be conscious. He's the person. Therefore, what expands is the people. Right? So, therefore, then it's such a so in the beginning, a devotional service, yes, you take your senses, you engage them, whatever it is, you have your nature, you engage that in Krishna's service. It's perfect because in the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda takes her form, her nature, with the facility and knowledge she has, then engages in Krishna's service. Right? But it's based on pure devotion. She has pure devotion. Therefore, she has all that facility. But here, we have the particular knowledge and skills and body and whatever situation we're in, not because of devotion, but because of material consciousness. But the principle that we're being asked to do is simply take the position that you have now, whatever it is, and just connect it to Krishna. So you use it, you take your situation, your knowledge, you like that, you know, your identity, and then take that and connect that to Krishna. And connecting that to Krishna, then you the results that you get from that are for Krishna's pleasure. So yes, we are starting basically from ourselves and going up. But the knowledge how to do that is coming down. It's inductive. It's coming down from authority. Because in the spiritual world, they don't use this inductive method. It's deductive. It's about Krishna. So Krishna's there. The situation is there. And in that situation, I have the, you know, ability to perform these activities. Right? So just like Krishna's there, you know, everybody's there together. They come back from the fields and all this and that, or they, you know, like this, whatever. Everybody's together. So being together, then Mother Yashoda is there. She'll come over. She may embrace Krishna, do an artik for him, this and that. And then hanging out, Subal also may, you know, embrace Krishna or, you know, hang out with Krishna, put his hand on his shoulder and all that. The gopis are also there, but can they go over and embrace Krishna and put their hand on Krishna's shoulder? No, it's not their situation for that. So you could say is no, but we are gopis, you know, we want to do, you know, why is it only they get to do that? We also want to do that. We want to do, you know, everybody, you know, what about, you know, equal spiritual opportunity here. We want to all be able to do everything and all that. Then what would be with pastimes? What pastimes you'd have? That'd be taking 10th canto Bhagavatam, sticking in the blender and hitting the button. So that's the whole point is Krishna's not interested in that so-called homogenous, impersonal conception. Because that's impersonalism. Because you're starting with yourself, you're making it about yourself. You're trying to make it look like it's about Krishna by throwing in, oh, we're not this body or equal spiritual opportunity. I use the words, but what's my purpose? It's political. It's just, I get to do whatever I want. I don't have to follow authority. Does that make sense? So that's the whole difficulty is everybody seems to be frozen unless you're just so wrapped in attention. Okay. Lalitanath moved. Okay. where we're still here. But okay. I was just worried that everything froze. Can you hear? So then the point comes down is it doesn't start with us. It starts with Krishna. That's the descending process. The descending process, it starts with Krishna. Then we bring it to ourselves. Ascending means I start with myself. And if I'm fortunate, I take the ascending as far as Krishna. And by doing that, I connect to Krishna. I purify the senses. I move forward. But we have to remember is that by doing something without attachment, like that will purify us to the point of liberation. It will get us out of the material world. But it's what we do with the intent to please Krishna, that mood of devotion that's going to take us into the spiritual world and into the platform of prema. It's not because I did my sadhana so strictly, therefore I'm going to develop prema. No, you do that strictly, that'll get you purified. And in a purified state, the soul naturally, then in good association, thinks about Krishna. So the two go hand in hand. But one has to know what the primary is and what the secondary is. Always remember Krishna is the primary. Never forget is the secondary. So the secondary's only purpose is to support the primary. What's the point of not forgetting Krishna? So that you're always remembering. So in other words, that I'm doing something for devotion, that's the primary aspect. And then the various knowledge and skills and tools and environments that I use, that's secondary simply for the purpose to express that devotion I have to Krishna. So like, let us say, an example, you want to express your devotion to Krishna. And so let's say one has the ability to cook for Krishna. So there's an offering, you know, we have so many offerings a day for Krishna. And so therefore then, you go into the kitchen and you use your knowledge and skills to produce a cooked preparation. Right? And so that cooked preparation then used all kinds of knowledge, skills, the pots, the pans, recipes, and time factor, and all kinds of different things. But it only is devotion if the attitude was it's for pleasing Krishna. Right? So, therefore, since it's for pleasing Krishna, I want to do the best job possible at cooking. Therefore, you see in the Vedic cultures, the high level of knowledge and skill that everybody has, because it's all about pleasing Krishna. Right? And on the material platform, there's only a high level of knowledge and skills because there's something to be gained for myself. That's why I do it. That's karma. And then jnana, or liberation is, I have nothing to gain from it, so I do nothing. Right? So that's the whole thing that's unique about bhakti, is I'm performing the activity with detachment to please Krishna. Because in karma, I perform it with attachment. And in jnana, I'm detached, I don't perform an activity. So this thing where I am performing an activity without a desire for the results, we've never done this, you know, and as being done to please Krishna, we've never done this before. In material consciousness, it has never been done. We have done activities because we want the results, or rejected activities because we didn't want the result. But we've never done an activity without attachment to get a result for Krishna. That's never been done before. So, therefore, we have to be very, very careful to see that when we're engaging our conditioning, our nature, our senses, our mind, our intelligence, our identities, that we are able to understand that these have a value as long as they're manifesting devotional service. It's not that I am a devotee, I do devotional service. Therefore, everything I do is devotional service. No, you do something as devotional. It is. You do something that's not. It's not. There's the only activities that there are in the cosmos are the activities of devotional service. You can also go against them and do the opposite if you like, right? There's the negative is there. Just like you have light, you have dark. But the point is darkness is just lack of light. So sinful activities are just lack of pious activities. The pious activities are simply the original activities of the spiritual world done to please Krishna. While here, then it's a reflection, we use those same activities for ourselves. That's why it's called perverted reflection. So in the Vedic culture, if it's being followed, then the reflection itself, the external reflection, looks very similar to the spiritual world. But it, of course, is reflected on external energy, so it doesn't quite have the same wonderful qualities that they have in the spiritual world, right? But the principle that they're using, yeah, it means that'll be the same. So the perversion is the aspect that I'm doing it for myself rather than for the Lord. Then you have those that don't follow the Vedic culture, so now you're perverting the perversion. So now the form that's there is not even a proper form.
Mark, you've frozen, if you can hear us.
Am I talking? So the living entities, then they have the idea that you can't hear.
Now it's coming again.
Lagging too much. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to do about it.
Now it's good, Marge.
Now it's coming again. Okay. So the living entity, then their natural position is. Now it's working? Okay. Now it's good. Okay. So the living entity is natural position is to use all their, you know, body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. And material means I use body, mind, and words not in Krishna's service. It's that simple. Krishna is the focus of our knowledge and skills, that we're doing that to please him in devotion, you know, pure devotion. That's bhakti. We're performing our knowledge and skills, but not with the idea of pleasing Krishna, even though I might, okay, he's the boss, I got to do things he likes, but it'll still be called karma, or I want liberation of the young. So that's why you see, let's say, the smartas, even though they perform all the activities of devotional service, these smarta brahmins, their ideas, they don't think of the Lord. Form is eternal, just that he's the biggest of all the authorities, and so you please him, then I will get my results in karma again. So they're not counted as devotees, even though they are worshiping Vishnu and performing basically all the activities we are. So this ability to be able to see what is devotion and what's not. Like I'm using management in Krishna's service, that's devotion. Management itself is just an activity and knowledge and skill of the, you know, the jnana and kriya shakti. Until it's used for Krishna, it doesn't become bhakti. So that's the uniqueness of when Rupa Goswami describes in the devotional service of the five main items. Chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deities, and living in the holy Dham. Those are directly spiritual, whether we're conscious or not. Devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, the bugs in the but when we go home, we have our house, we have our money, we have our car, we have our clothes, we have whatever else is there. Only when you engage those dependency and you take some of that money and give it to Krishna, because then the end result was for Krishna, then you get the benefit of the knowledge and skills being connected to Krishna also. Right? Everything becomes perfect because that's the end game, is to do it. Do things to please Krishna. So if you're doing things to please Krishna, then you get that result. You get that credit. But you see in the spiritual world, they don't have this in connection with Krishna. Their skills are in connection with Krishna. And so every moment it's always, so that's what pure devotion is. It's always there. Otherwise, I do the thing in the 18th chapter. Sannyas means it's always for Krishna. Therefore, we see is that all these great devotees, they always act on that platform of sannyas. It's never for them. It's always for Krishna. So then pure devotion is that is those. And so whatever, and we don't know Krishna. And so then we learn about Krishna from the chair with Krishna. They then tell us what Krishna likes, what he likes to eat, what he likes to do. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained that for human ingredients that are called food for a human being, you know, who's interested in spiritual life. You know, so you have the grains, you have the vegetables, you have the fruits, you have dairy products, and you have sugar, you know, or sweetener. And so all these combined together, you use to do nice things for Krishna. But of all these, Krishna's, his most favorite food, you know, especially we see in Vrindavan, is dairy products. So that means then the grains are with dairy products, the vegetables are with dairy products, the fruits with dairy products, the dairy products are with dairy products, and the sugar is with dairy products. So dairy product becomes the central feature for Krishna. And so then now we know that, oh, that's what pleases Krishna. So then we try to do things in that way connected with Krishna. Because from our own conditioning, we may have all kinds of, oh, cholesterol is there and the milk is bad for you. You drink milk, you get fat or this or that or so many things. And so we may or may not like to, but that's, you know, it's a consideration about us. Pure devotion means it's about Krishna. Of course, if you're cooking in your house, you have to cook things that you can eat. But the whole point is that you cook for Krishna, the mentality. But when you're in the temple, then for Krishna, you do it in that way. You don't adjust. Temple, because I'm natural.
The connection is quite unsteady, Maharaj. It's difficult to catch what you're saying.
So therefore, Krishna has to eat all.
I'm not sure he can hear us now, Prabhu. That's interesting.
So, you know, whether it calls, you know, buckwheat and raw stuff and this and that. You showed a number of feet.
Maharaj, it's difficult.
So the whole point is it's about Krishna. That's why we do things the way we do. That's why the Artik is the way it is. We dress Krishna the way that is. That's why we dress how we dress. Why we talk how we talk. You know, the language we use, the books we do, the activities, that's all because it pleases Krishna. Yeah, so then, so the idea is that the devotee, there's nothing I can do about it. With global warming here on my side of the planet, but I can't say that you'll get any benefit on your side. What should we do?
Hi, Krishna, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear.
Okay, now we can hear you again. We lost kind of a bit of a chunk of the last.
Okay. So, pure devotion then is about that it's being done to please Krishna. And so that's why sadhana bhakti is there. It's a practice how to get to the platform of pure devotion. We associate with the pure devotees. We hear from the pure devotees. And we practice what they've given us with the idea to try to attain pure devotional service. And so with that as our intent, even though we may not be pure, we may be using aropya bhakti in the beginning, that we're overlaying what's important to us and then offering to Krishna. That's fine, because the point is we're offering what we think is the best to Krishna, because in the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda offers the best to Krishna. The cowherd boys do the best for Krishna. The gopis do the best for Krishna. So we do what we think is the best here. But it's called aropya bhakti. It's considered a neophyte platform. Then as we go, we do that, we get purified. It becomes more and more about Krishna. And then it becomes more and more less about ourselves and more about what Krishna likes. And then how we, in our position, can connect ourselves to Krishna. So we see we naturally then go from the Kanishtha platform, the Madhyam platform, you know, so and we move to Nishkamananda. And then from there, we get to pure devotional service. So it's important to understand this process. Otherwise, you'll have a big problem with community. It means you have a big problem with your own devotional service, but you'll have a problem with community, because sometimes the community comes up with strange philosophies like, oh, you know, we're Danish. We do this. We don't dress like this. We don't eat this. We don't eat that. The strange thing is that you're Danish. Why the hell are you wearing blue jeans? That's American. Not only is it American, it's what the cowboys used to wear. And when we say cowboys, we mean those unwashed people with six shooters that used to herd cattle around till they were fat enough. Texas or New Mexico or like that for slaughter. So in other words, we're wearing the jeans, right? Yeah, you can hear?
No? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the glory of modern
technology. Try turning off our camera also to see if that helps.
Huh? We'll turn off all the cameras, see if that helps. Okay, now we should be better, Prabhu, because Marge's internet connection's back up to full. But
wonderful.
So you can tell everybody's individual connection and how strong it is?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. So you guys were connection was all right all the time. My one wasn't good.
Yeah. It's like when we were doing one of the other seminars, I could tell exactly whose was not right, and I could tell them just to leave and come back. And most of the time that works, but sometimes we all have to leave and come back.
I see. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
So
then in this, as you see, is there's this very fine line where it becomes sometimes difficult to tell what's pure and what's not pure. Because we're accustomed to or conditioned to seeing development and excellence based on the external platform of the material energy and its manipulation and the how good the results are, right? So therefore, if we're getting good results externally, we'll say it's going well, and because good, you know, good means Krishna consciousness. You know, therefore, then it's Krishna conscious. Well, good means pleasing Krishna. So the point is for Krishna, we have to remember, he already is the best manager in the cosmos. He is the most wealthy. He is the most beautiful. He is the best dresser. He has the nicest vehicles, right? You know, it's like, who has a vehicle that you could climb on their back and fly anywhere in the cosmos you like? Right? The Garuda can take Krishna anywhere and do it immediately. He can fly at the speed of mind. So Who has that? Nobody. So the point is we're not going to impress Krishna with our particular mundane knowledge and skills. What he's impressed with is that we use that to the best of our ability to please him. That's what's nice. That's what pleases him. So it's not that, oh, knowledge and skills, we don't care, so it doesn't matter, we just all be idiots. No. You use whatever you have, your nature, to the best you can. But it's not being the best that makes it valuable. It's that it's being done for Krishna, and you're doing your best. So in the beginning, just doing the external thing of I do my best, and then I give the results to Krishna. Yes, we start there. But we have to know pure devotion will mean that we're doing it from the beginning to please Krishna. We're doing our best because it will please Krishna. That then becomes the distinction between whether it's pure devotional service or mixed devotional service. So mixed is very valuable because it is connected to Krishna. It is therefore purifying us. It is bringing us closer to Krishna. So there is no fault there, but we have to actually know what is the standard so that we don't get stuck and think that our beginning stays. Just like the child goes to school the first day and learns a few letters of the alphabets and a few numbers. He comes home because he knew nothing before. Now he comes home and, to his mom, he presents himself as a great scholar, right? And in the beginning, it's fine. The parents will encourage him. And, yeah, you're the best scholar and this and that. Look at that, A, B, C, or Abasa, or whatever you call it over there, And so then, like that. But as far as where he's supposed to get, it's nowhere near, but it's encouraged because yes, then they can aspire, they keep going, and sometime then they can read in that, then they can start to think in the language, they can start to compose in the language, express in the language, understand what others have expressed. Now you're talking about, now they've come to the point what you were starting in grade one. So sadhana means we're connecting to Krishna, and even if it's only one drop, it's still one drop of reality. The material world is just a huge one quarter of cosmos of illusion. But one drop of reality, that's real. That's why devotional service is more powerful than the material energy. Because it's real, it's connected to Krishna. So therefore, everyone can be encouraged that whatever position I'm in, I can engage that in Krishna's service, and I can take my mentality, whatever my values are, and try to use that nicely in Krishna's service. But we have to know ultimately it's about pleasing Krishna. So that's why, yes, we use nicely the external facilities we have, but at the same time, we can't be too attached to them because it's about pleasing Krishna. That's why the Yudhishthira we were discussing yesterday, Yudhishthira Maharaj makes the point that we are going to have our knowledge and our skills and apply that, right? We're going to have that focus. We're going to make that endeavor. But the result is up to Krishna because it's about pleasing Krishna. So maybe you get a big result. Like you see the Pandavas went out to arrange everything for the Rajasuya sacrifice. The results they've gotten were so great that Duryodhana had never seen anything like that in his life. They had to turn people away when they were coming to bring tribute. They were bringing so much stuff that they couldn't accommodate at the time. They had to get in line. Wait your turn. All the kings are there, yes, and this and that. Because normally a king comes with so much gifts and all that. He expects to walk straight in. But because there were so many, they had to get in line. Like that. And Duryodhana was in charge of moving it all, accepting it, and then putting it into the treasury. And Vidura would note it, what's there. And so Duryodhana, he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. He had to sit down sometimes. He was so tired. Like that. So that's what came in from simply their focus and endeavor to do the Rajasuya sacrifice to please Krishna. But at the same time, other times, then you see, then there's a gambling match, they lose everything. And that was all lost within a very short time. We're not talking, over years, they lost all the wealth. No, we're talking about, sitting down and, half an hour or something like this, or an hour. They lost everything, gone. Then, Dhritarashtra saw how dangerous all this was, and he gave everything back and sent them off. Duryodhana freaks out again. They bring him back. Okay, you know, whoever wins this goes to the forest for 12 years and 1 year incognito inside a, you know, inside a village or a town or a city. And if they go incognito, then great. And if not, then again, 12 years. And so then they throw the dice once, gone. That now everything was gone. Before it took them a little bit of time, half an hour, 1 hour to lose everything. This one, it was all lost in one throw. And then they ended up in the forest. But we see as Krishna then came and visited them there, Vidura came, you know, everybody, you know, like this, and they had a fabulous time there. Right? There's more time spent in the forest in the description there than there is telling what they were doing in Indraprastha. Like that. Because Indraprastha, they got all that stuff. It's fabulous. But day-to-day life, you're just running a kingdom. It's just every day is the same as the last day. But definitely went before. Now that's where some fun's happening. So we have to see is that what Krishna, how it goes is there. We take it that no, if it externally is going nice, then it's Krishna conscious, then it's religious, then Krishna cares for us. And if it goes bad or doesn't work out the way we wanted by our conditioning, then we go see why I was doing for Krishna. Why didn't Krishna let it come out like that? Because the point is Krishna doesn't need those things. He's looking for the devotion. So by it not working out, we increase the devotion. That's what Kunti Devi said. Says when we're in times of distress, we tended to think of you more. And now that everything's going nicely in this, now we're not thinking as much. So her point was, you know, better we have trouble. You know, so we make our endeavor to do the best we can to serve Krishna. And doing that best to serve Krishna, then everything goes, everything, that's what was perfect. That's what pleases Krishna. So we have to see that, is that yes, okay, if you are cooking for Krishna, you want to cook your best. You can't just be lazy and do whatever because it doesn't matter. It's all about how I feel. So, of course, I feel great devotion. But if you do, show it, prove it. You know, how you say, what do you call that? Where you express it, you know, by practical endeavor, engaging the senses, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti, Ruchita. So, therefore, then you're managing, you want to manage the best for Krishna, but you have to know it's about pleasing Krishna. You know? And then we don't come up with all these modern isms and all these different things like this and get so worried about that. You know, they're saying Black Lives Matter, but they've always mattered because every life matters. But they're writing for the last 40 days in Portland, you know, still over this one. But it's, why only them? Why not everybody? Right? They harass the priests. Why their lives don't matter? They don't care? They don't matter? You know? What about all those people's shops that they stole everything? That doesn't matter? You know, like that. So, of course, there's something to be gained there that somebody's not dealing properly. And so one has to learn from that and understand and appreciate that. You know, the whole point, the endeavor that's there, but at the same time, it's not broad enough. Even when you take it that like that, you know, you take it from yourself to your family, to your community, to your nation, to the world, but still it's not enough. Until it includes Krishna, it's not enough. So that's why we have to be very, very careful. We say, okay, well, we can learn, let's say, management from the karmis and all there and get their self-help books and all that, but they never show how to connect it to Krishna. Bhagavatam shows you how. So Bhagavatam is the book that shows all that. Some details of tools you can use, but if you don't use them for Krishna, it's not going to give you a result that's satisfying to the devotees. You may have followed the book, did everything perfectly, but if you weren't doing it for Krishna, thinking about Krishna, you were just more worried about following the rules in that book, then you've missed the actual rule of always remembering Krishna, never forget. And so neither that person or anyone else will be satisfied. Why? Krishna's not satisfied? No one's satisfied. Very simple. So we have to always keep it in mind that pure devotional service means the attitude. But it's expressed. So it's the masculine feminine principle. You have the Shakti and the Shaktiman. How do you know the Shakti is there? Because it means the Shaktiman is there because he manifests through his internal potency. But the internal potency has no meaning or basis without Krishna. Without Krishna, there is no energy. But you know Krishna is there through his energy. So by the grace of Krishna, one gets guru. By the grace of guru, one gets Krishna. So one has to understand that this dynamic, these philosophical points, they're practical. In the spiritual world, these are all practical things that they just do. Here we say it's philosophy. Here we say it's all theory. But it's reality for them in the spiritual world. This is how they work. This is how they think. That's why you see they can speak the philosophy so comfortably, is because that's the platform they're on. You see, Prabhupada, when he speaks, it's always about Krishna as a person. He always brings it to this point. He's always pointing out you have to connect everything to Krishna. That's because that's how he sees it. And then we can associate, we can learn that, and we can try to apply that in our life, and we'll have, you know, and gradually we'll start to get the same results. So that's the whole point, is one has to see is that, oh, but in a community, unless everybody loves each other and this and that, then there's no community. What does that got to do with it? You love Krishna, then you love everybody. But you try to love everybody individually, it won't happen. It'll never happen. It can't happen. Because you won't love just everybody. Because if there's somebody that doesn't agree with your loving everybody, then you don't love them. So right there, your philosophy is finished. So the whole point is that, and then you'll say, oh, they're getting in the way of community. But then what about these great personalities that despite that, like Prahlad Maharaj, doesn't matter how much he's being harassed by his father, he still goes on, you know, giving affection to, you know, the boys in school and everybody else. So you love Krishna, everything works nicely. You have community. You don't love Krishna, you won't have community. It doesn't matter what tricks you do, it won't happen. You know, because, I mean, when's the last time there was strong community? Okay, you had a big long boat, you get on it with your battle axe and your shield and your, you know, your helmet with the horns on it and all that. And, you know, go out somewhere and pillage and burn and bring everything else back, you know, to your place. Now they had community, right? You know, and, you know, a few berserkers to go along with that in case, you know, somebody's making too much trouble. And, Hari Bal. So the thing is, you know, that there's not a whole lot there to engage in detail in Krishna service. Right? Means that people work together, they have a common goal, they work hard, they put in their best effort according to their nature. Now that's eternal. So it worked for the Norsemen then, it'll work for the Norsemen now. So the point is you have to take, and see that it's engaging yourself in Krishna's service. It's the attitude. And then you, of course, try to do your best, the technique. But if we get distracted by all these so-called pranamaya or, you know, mundane moralistic concepts, we won't get to devotion. Because the point is why do you have to love everyone? Because it's Krishna's law that you see all living entities connected to him. That's religion. It's Krishna's law. But it's that, oh, that's what everybody's saying now, and I feel like that, and rainbows are out, and butterflies are flying, and somebody's playing on the panpipes, and we're doing a circle dance, you know, with marigold garlands all around our heads, and, you know, holding hands, and everyone's got long, flowing, you know, nice cotton cloth and stuff like that. And yeah, you can do that, and how much time you'll do that? How often will you do that? Right? Once here and there? Every so many years, or yes, we did that 30 years ago. And then that's it. So the whole point is that Krishna's laws, that's religion, not sentiment. Faith is not religion. It's Krishna's laws. Following his laws, that's religion. And then we do that. We follow religion to please Krishna. And so that faith in Krishna, as a person, that relationship with Krishna, that's what we're cultivating. So that's why, you know, someone has said, no, it's got to be, you know, the Vedic Varnashram, this, that. Someone else, oh, no, we're, you know, we're Westerners, we're different, we're new, we're unique, we're special in the whole universe. There's no one like us anywhere because we're so fabulous and perfect and everything's so nice. So we just have to change everything the way ever we like it and feel like it. And that will be perfection. So these both positions of Niyamagraha you know, of only rules and rejecting the rules. These both will not get you pure devotion. So much of the time you say community, oh no, you know, the temple's not in charge. Who's in charge? Who gets the money? Who that? That's all. So where's community? Is that our community is based on who gets the money or doesn't get the money? Who's in control or not? No, it's based on common value of serving Krishna. How to serve Krishna in your position. Somebody will be a student. Somebody will be in secondary school. Somebody's in primary school. Somebody's graduated now doing, you know, their internship in that. Someone else is married. Someone else has a job. Someone else doesn't have a job. You know, so all these positions, what job they have. Some of them are going to be doctors and lawyers. Someone else is going to be, you know, how you say, working down at the local, you know, Tesco's or whatever it is you guys got over there. You know? And so, you know, there's going to be such a variety that based on the externals, you will not be able to create community. Because as we said, yeah, Amish are a community. Everyone has their beard with no mustache. Everyone has their overalls. Everyone has a horse and a buggy. And everyone has a wooden house that they all built together as a community. And they all farm. That's it. You know? I mean, they'll do a little blacksmithing to fix their tools and put and shoe the horses, but it's all centered around that. And that's it. Are devotees going to do that? We have so many farms around the world. How many devotees move out to the farm and actually farm? Like about that many? Did I get it right? Did I overestimate? New Govardhan. Two people. Big farm. Huge community. Hundreds of devotees. One or two actually farm. Who farms for them? The woofers. Now that is clever. That you have to hand to the temple president because he saw no one else is going to do the farming. But there's this group called woofers. Means, I think, work on organic, something like that, farms. Yeah, work on organic farms. Woof, something like that. And then you go there. They work 4 hours a day. You give them a place to stay. You give them food. And then they'll stay there for, you know, some weeks, some months, because they're traveling. They're just traveling around the world. They want to, you know, like they're in Australia, they go to Australia because they want to see Australia. And so then, you know, what to do. So they're a woofer. So they go stay at this farm. They do their stuff 4 hours a day. The rest of the day, they can go do what they like and that. And so they go around, see this and that. And if they like it there, they'll stay more. They don't like it. They'll move on to the next woofer place. But so the president there was so smart. He saw, we can get these guys and we may have nice facilities like that. So he has so many 20, 30 woofers there. They take care of all the farming. They grow everything. They take care of the cows and do all the stuff. So it's a great farm. But as far as the devotees go, no, all the farmers left. You know, and the city people aren't about to, you're going to get your fingers to, you got, that's mud underneath your fingernails. I mean, you know, that's yucky. You know, then on your boots, you know, like they foot all covered with mud and all that. You know, it's like, are you kidding? You know, I paid, you know, $50 for these Nike shoes. You think I'm going to get mud on them? You know, so it's kind of like, you know, forget it. So that's the whole thing is you have to see the nature. So you're going to have to apply Varnashram, how it applies in a city. Now you can, some people say, oh no, you can't have Varnashram in the cities, this, that, and they'll go on and on like this forever. And, you know, seriously adding to the global warming. But the whole point is what was Hastinapur? What was Indraprastha? You know, what was, you know, all, you know, Giridraja, you know, what are these, so many major cities where millions and millions of people lived. And so they didn't follow Varnashram. So the whole point is whatever position you are in, you follow Varnashram. You can say, oh, it has to be agrarian based and like, where do you think the food comes from? Does the food come out of a factory? Rice and dal, can they make it in a factory? Can they make a cauliflower or a potato in a factory? No. They can process them. They have to be grown on the ground. So even right now, everything is agrarian based. It's just that There's a lot of distance between the original agrarian aspect and now what you have when it, you know, hits your, you know, hits the market in that nice little styrofoam thing with a little, you know, plastic over the top, and it looks so fabulous and everything like that. So the whole point is that whatever position you are in, the city people in Indraprastha, we're following Varnashram. The Pandavas who are in the city, not doing one bit of farming. Draupadi never got dirt under her nails. Yes, but she lived in a city. She was a queen. She didn't do that. She managed the palace. Tens of thousands of maidservants. Yudhishthira gambled 100,000 maidservants. All those 100,000 maidservants are managed by Draupadi. How many CEOs on the planet could manage 100,000 women in one building? I doubt you have anybody on the planet. So that means Draupadi was more qualified than any of the biggest CEOs, managers, generals, or anything on the planet today. So the whole point is since you're in the city, you're going to have to understand that Varnashram still works in the city. This misnomer that, oh, it only means farming and anybody who's Varnashram has to be out in the farm. If you get the purpose of the farms is self-sufficiency out there, simple lifestyle. You don't have to be caught up in all this modern and all this and that. And that's great. And those who can do that, that's fabulous. It is the standard. I mean, previously, I mean, when I came to India and even up to a few years ago, 80% of India lived in the villages, only a smaller percent. Now I think it's switched. Now everybody lives in the city and not so many out in the village, you know, because of the Western influence. So you have to be able to take it that this is going to work in, you have to take it, and people according to their position, what are their services, they have to do them right. If they're a doctor, they got to do doctor stuff. They're a lawyer, do lawyer stuff. You know, you're doing something else. You're doing an office job. Then you have to do that right. You have to deal according to the etiquette and everything like this, as Krishna says. That's its purpose. Then, but you're doing that because as a grihastha, then you have to maintain the family. So you have an occupation, varna, right? Ashram is grihastha and the varna is whatever it is. And you're doing that to please Krishna because the results are going to be used for Krishna. Your family's going to be Krishna conscious. You're going to go to the temple. You're going to use the money in connection with Krishna and all that. So then it works out fine. So morning and evening, you're able to do your ashram stuff. And during the day, you do your varna stuff. That's called varnashram. But it's a proper mentality, proper understanding. So everybody can be involved. And then if you have, if your zone does have a farm, then the farm can develop all those, agrarian aspects, you know, the cows and the land and all that very wonderful stuff. And so they can do that. Those who can relate there do that. And those who are in the city, they're going to do that. But to say until no, everybody's got to go out to the farm, it's not going to happen. It will never happen. Prabhupada established farms back in the 70s. Where are the farmers? Where is it going on? Where is the self-sufficiency? Right? So that means at this point in time, then it will be slow. And so you establish that people in whatever position they're in can be Krishna conscious. That's the proper understanding for an ashram. To just say, no, unless it's agrarian, it's not, that's not an understanding because those people, they only understand farming. They don't understand shooters. They don't understand Vaishyas are doing trade. They don't understand Kshatriyas. They don't understand Brahmins. Right? And then, you know, where's the brahmacharis on that? You know, they got to study. No, they got to go grow carrots. You know, vanaprasas. Oh, they should be out. No, they're not. So basically they understand a bit of grihasthas who are themselves personally farming. That's not a complete varnashram system. That's why they stop calling it varnashram and just call it socio-economic development committee. That's the official name. So that's the whole point is that then those who are doing that, then develop it when they work it out. So it works nicely. Everybody will start to do that on their places and expand. So you see is water. They're getting some things done. They have their farm. They're getting some things done. And some places are getting, like I said, in Mawilamba, they're getting some stuff done and slowly, slowly it'll get established. So those that can relate to it should establish it, because the city people, they're not about to be able to do it. So the city people should figure out how they're living in the city. Then they're going to be Krishna conscious and follow Varnashram in the city. That's how you get community. Varnashram is for the community. The temple just needs Pancharatra. Right? So with brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, sannyasis, and brahmins, with that much, you can run a temple. You don't need kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Right? Because everybody's just doing temple service around the temple. They do different aspects according to their nature. Someone manages, someone cooks, someone preaches, someone cleans, like that. Someone studies, someone teaches. But it's all within that brahminical kind of environment. So to expand that, but the point is, you know, communities are there because people are not interested in living in the temple. And as Prabhupada pointed out, everyone won't live in the temple. Most people won't live in the temple. How big is the temple? You know, so unless you take over one of those buildings built by Stalin, then you're not going to get that many people in your temple. You know, and even you do, you know, some hundreds or thousands. But, you know, you're not going to get millions. You know, Versailles, 10,000 people would live there during Louis the 14th time. But still, that's only 10,000. Yeah. You know, Paris, how big is that? Mm-hmm. How many millions? You know, tens of millions. So it's not going to work. So it's going to be that broader community. But everybody has to know as they're engaging themselves in their services according to their ability and according to the nature. But it's the devotion in which they do it to Krishna, which is the actual central feature. And yes, maybe you can't always remember Krishna. You just try to do it nicely, because at the end you'll offer it to Krishna. But with time, as you get purified, you're able to remember more and more. Then it starts to work. But taking this thing as, oh, we don't have to do all this. We're Westerners and this and that. We dress what we like. We eat what we like. We, you know, go to the toilet like we like. You know, we pick our nose like we like, because we're Westerners. We're so fabulous and so intelligent, isn't it? But isn't that what this, all these riots are going on about in the world about? Because we have to remember, that's the white man's lifestyle. Technically, if you want to be real technical, it's called WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. If you want to be really clear on it.
Marsh, can we take a question from Tapas Prabhu?
Why not?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Regarding, you know, community development and the development of the whole society, ISKCON. So, Srila Prabhupada said that this movement can only develop by love and trust.
Yes.
So, of course.
I mean, some give a definition of that. Love money and yourself, trust no one. And then it's done.
So my question here is more about, because this is a very big topic, but what does trust mean? What does it not mean in this development of the spiritual movement?
Trust means is that you have trust in Krishna, trust in the transcendental autocrat, you know, in him, that this paradigm of Krishna and everything connected to Krishna, and that is all coming from him, and he is pervading everything. Everything is him. And so therefore, then he is everywhere. We can see him everything. We can deal with him everywhere, and everybody's based on that principle, and to involve you in that way in pure devotion. So in other words, love and trust is that, because the focal point is pure devotion. But otherwise, if we try to deal on the mundane platform of love and trust, that's not working out. People have tried, that switch was made you got a bit of incremental in around 86, and in about 94, 95, they made a nice shift in that. And they've been trying to make that work ever since. And things are just getting farther and farther apart. Because you can't use a mundane moralistic system to make a spiritual movement work. You have to use spiritual morality, right? And spiritual morality means the laws of God used to please Krishna, right? Mundane means I follow the laws of God because if God's pleased, I can get my karma or jnana. And then the problem is the modern thing is, oh, we don't have to follow all this religion and tradition. You know, it's whatever we feel like. We know we're all God's children and all that kind of stuff. And so then, you know, we just do whatever we like. And that's what you see on the streets, you know, today. And there's less and less community. Like that. It means you have two people sitting in the room looking at something on the internet. And even if they type in the same, you know, query, they will get different results. Because the algorithms are based on whatever they've looked before, everything that they do, you know, they blew their nose, so they use one tissue or two, and that will be factored into the algorithm. So you do not have community. People say, but it's just talk. You can't have community based on pranamoy if there's no, that means you can't have community unless there is a willingness to follow the common rules and regulations. And who wants to do that? Because everyone's sort of a different background, different nature. So the only thing common is Krishna. So if you don't trust in Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas and in the Shastra, then you're going to have a real problem trying to make community. And if you have, you know, trust in Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas based on Shastra, then you'll see it becomes very, very much easier, very natural to establish community. So that's the difficulty, is that the idea is community, you know, we're all there together, you know, I am you and you are me and we are all together and that kind of jazz, you know. So, but the problem is that, that's mundane. It's atheistic. It's not based on the principle of I'm a human. Humans have common duties. Therefore, humans have a social structure that they perform their duties within. That's human. We want to act outside of that, but claim that we're better than humans. We want to live the lifestyle of an animal and claim we're humans. That's just pure false ego. You know, it's now you could debate whether it's pure false ego or pure unalloyed false ego. That just depends upon the particular individual and their, you know, their advancement and commitment to that particular philosophy. But all these things nowadays, oh, we're Westerners, we can't do that. That's kind of like, what does that got to do with anything? I mean, what in reality, each person in the city does something differently. Because yes, there's a few people, like I've seen it. I have an idea. Something pops into my head. I walk out of my place where I'm staying, and I walk and I bump into a friend or two. I explain it to them. They agree with me. Then I'll go into a meeting. Right after that, and then make my point. Everybody says this. Everybody means me and my one or two friends. But they'll say it. Everybody. It's like the whole planet, you know, does this. No, they don't. But these are things that just by the modes of nature, people take as authority. Because vox populi is very important. But we see in the Vedic system, it's not about vox populi. It's about Krishna. About Krishna popular, what Krishna likes, that then becomes what the people like. And that, because all those people are part and parcel of Krishna, when they see their lives in context of Krishna, then it works. But we're trying very, very hard as no, it's about the devotion, so it doesn't matter what we wear. Yes, it doesn't matter what we wear, but it does matter why you're wearing what you wear. Does that make sense? Just like, it doesn't matter whether you wear a dhoti or you wear white pants. But like that, because it's about devotion. But it does matter why you're wearing pants. One's wearing the dhoti because that's what we're supposed to do for Krishna. That's what we've been trained, and so we're wearing them. Right? The other one's wearing the pants because I would wear a dhoti, but you know, when I go to work, then it doesn't work out so good. So therefore I wear pants. Someone else wears pants because we're Westerners and this is our clothes. And so therefore we wear pants, and just within our heart, you know, we have devotion for Krishna. That person's not going to advance very quickly. Because their motive in wearing pants is not about Krishna. So most of these philosophies, we see these anamoy philosophies that come up, anamoy and pranamoy philosophies that are touted in the name of community and all these different things. They're just straight up front mundane. They're totally self-centered. And they're not about Krishna. And they'll use actual points of, you know, philosophy and religion that are there just to prove their point, but it's not the spirit of those. Yeah, we couldn't care less what you wear. But the point is you're trying to be Krishna conscious, so you're doing your best. And so if you're not wearing because you're a Westerner, then that's totally mundane. I mean, totally. You say, oh no, but we don't want to disturb people and all that. It says, people are disturbed by people, probably by what you're wearing. You know what I'm saying? If you see a guy in a t-shirt and a pair of shorts and flip-flop on the corner, and you don't know where you're going, you've kind of gotten lost. Are you going to ask that guy or a guy who's more properly dressed? Right? I'm not going to ask that guy. I'm going to ask the guy in the suit or the guy in proper dress casuals or something like that. I'm not going to ask that guy in the sweater because I know that guy is a bit of a slob. And so what's going to be his motive? What's going to be the gentleman? At least you know is that they'll properly respond socially. You know, just because that's the etiquette that you're supposed to do. And so the whole point is this, you know, we're saying like this, but the point is who does do these things? I mean, dressed in that, you can't go into, like in Italy, you can't go into a church in that. They won't let you in. You go to visit a church in Italy, they will not let you in the door unless you've got long pants on, full shirt like that, women cover their head, all that kind of jazz. Like that. They won't let you in. A lot of restaurants won't let you in. You know, you can't go to any official thing. You can't go to the board meeting unless you happen to be the boss. Something, they won't let you in. So there's so many occasions where we claim, oh, we're wearing the universal clothes of the Westerner and all that, but you can't wear that. Westerners have different clothes that they wear for different occasions. That's why you have that thing when you see businessmen and they go, they have that little funny bag that has all their suits and clothes in it. Because they're going to the meeting, they wear this suit. They're going out to dinner, they wear a different thing. They're going out to play golf, they wear something different again. They're going to go shopping, they wear something different again. They know. Different occasions, different clothes. And then we're saying, oh no, it's the Western thing that you just wear whatever you want and all that. That's hippies. That's not gentlemen. Prabhupada said modern, up-to-date gentlemen if you're going to wear kami clothes. He didn't say hippie. He specifically said, you want to move in the temple, you shave your head. Why? Because the hippies so attached to their hair, they want that. So you dress properly. As we mentioned before, that was the sixth item of the brahmacharya. They learn what it is the proper dress for the proper occasion according to who you are and your age and position and everything like that. So that's a standard thing. You dress like that, people respect that. You dress however you like, people don't respect it. And then the whole point is if they don't respect it, why would they want to hear from you about Krishna consciousness? So you see, those early days, Prabhupada had devotees were in dhotis, devotees were in suits. They went out hitchhiking. They were going, let's say, from LA to New York or someplace else like that to attend, you know, a program that Prabhupada was going to. They would go in suits, literally. You can look at the old pictures. You know? And so that's then it was more formal. You didn't have so much of this dress casual. Now you have that. You can be a little bit more relaxed, but still you look good, you look proper, everything matches, everything's good. And if you're doing that in the Western private, that's very expensive. Literally, it's expensive, and it keeps changing every few months or every few years, unless you're really classical. And I've rare seen a devotee dressed like that. You know, Balaram Prabhu in Australia used to be the president of Melbourne. He could dress like that. Bhavananda Prabhu could dress like that. You know, a few people, they know how to dress like that. Govinda Mars can dress, you know, so there's a few people who know how to dress like that. So the point is if we're doing that, then why we have to, it can't be about, oh, it's about me. You can start there, but don't make a philosophy that it's equal to or better than the Vedic system. Oh, that's Indian. We're Westerners. It's not Indian. It's Vedic. It's eternal. Oh, you can't say what's Vedic and all that. It says, no, step back. The person saying that can't say If you're representing the academy, of course the academy can't say, because you don't know what is there. You have to have some proper appreciation of it. Then Krishna will reveal. Yes, please.
Maharaj, I have a question. When we go and preach to the community, to the householders, we go and conduct a lot of home programs.
So yes.
If we want to inspire them about pure devotional service, what's the main impetus? Is it like goal orientation, going back to Godhead? Is it setting the proper example of pure devotional service? Is it like showing the relationships within that? How do we most efficiently inspire people to take up the mood of pure devotional service?
I would have to say yes.
Everything.
Yes, because the point is we're just going, we're practicing Krishna consciousness. We're happy in that Krishna consciousness. We're going out and sharing that with them. You know, does that make sense? You know, so say I like a particular kind of food, right? So I go and share that with others. But the point is because you like it, you're convinced. Therefore, they'll become convinced. But if you're not convinced, then, you know, then how you'll be convinced? How they'll be convinced? Individuals might be, but that has nothing, you're not really getting directly the credit for that. You know? So the whole point is we go out there and it's just like you have Prabhupada's books, just discuss what's going on in the purports there. You know? Because you say goal oriented, okay, but how do you get a goal?
You have to know.
It just comes on its own?
You have to hear about it.
Okay, you have to hear about it, but how will it be practical? So yes, that's the knowledge of it, but how will it be practically obtained?
You have to have a process.
You have to have a process, yes. And so that means you have to, for the goal, there must be a process. And for the process to work, what's required?
Knowledge, endeavor.
Knowledge, okay. The endeavor is the Abhideya. The knowledge is there, but you also have to have knowledge of what is the goal and what is that, and what's the last thing that's required in this whole thing.
Krishna.
No, he's the ultimate point of the whole thing. But it from your own side means any attitude will work.
Of the mood.
Yeah. Just any mood will work. Whatever you feel like today. No, it has to be what's recommended by the acharyas. Lord Chaitanya gave Trinada Pisuni Chena, Tororda Pisahishnuna, Amane Namana Dena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Right? That's the basic. Then Nadanam Najanam Nasandranim, then Ayinandanatana Jakinka, like that. You know, so the whole point is the Kshastik tells you what is the mood, what is the process, what is the position, what is the goal. So that's what we're teaching. So if you don't teach all four of those aspects, or that's five. Or like say, okay, that would be American. Then some places they would do it that way. So I'm not sure what would be that. Or a real American would be, no, that's three. Yeah, so that would be four. I get confused sometimes. So sometimes you see me do that one. Sometimes you see me do this one. You know, it just depends on who you're associating with. Which one do you start? How do you start? How do you count?
I never thought about that.
I mean, when you say one, what finger do you use?
I think I would start with the thumb.
Yeah, one. So that's a lot of times in Europe, it's one, two, three, four, five, like that. You know, in America, it'll be one, two, three, four, five. Right? That's how the Germans figured out who was American, by how they did the numbers. Right? So you're going to be convinced of Krishna consciousness yourself. You're going to therefore practice it yourself, right? And then you're going to show others how to understand it and practice it for themselves. So it's not a separate process. See, preaching is not a separate process. That's why sometimes there's overemphasis on, oh, we have to look at all these, you know, books and all this and that. But no book will explain those four parts like I just said. None of them. Take all the big, you know, gurus and all that, and, you know, each one up, none of them will talk about this. Take it all and put it all together, and then you get the secret, you know, and then you're still not going to get it. They will never talk about all of these forms. They don't know. So that's the whole point, is the Vedic system is perfect because it's, you, things only work if you follow God's laws, and God gave this. Right? That's the whole point. If things do work, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. So the elements of Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, these are what you're going to use combined together as Vasudev is the pastimes. So if you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the attitude, you don't have the skills, you don't have the understanding of the goal, you know, you don't make that endeavor, you don't, therefore you won't get a result. And if you don't have a result, what's going to be the experience? So you have to have all these and have knowledge of all these. And who teaches this? Zero. Nobody. Corporate doesn't teach it. None of your self-help books on any of those shelves will ever teach it. Systems, strategic planning, none of them teach it. And that's why using these systems for the last 25 years, we're not getting anywhere. I heard the other day, one leading person within the strategic planning, you know, whole kind of umbrella like that, they were saying, someone asking about the, you know, about strategic planning, says, yes, see, now after 20 years, people have heard of it. And he's coming from the angle of corporate. Would corporate say, oh, after 20 years, now people have heard about, you know, this idea? Would they buy it? He would have been fired 19 years and 6 months ago. Like fired, just like out the door. That's corporate. So that's the illusion, is that, oh, these things are going to make ISKCON great again. Right? It's not working for Trump. It's not going to work for anybody else. Does that make sense? So our own system, like I said in the beginning, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Then you have the Chaturvyuha, you know, to how that is. Because when you have Govinda Gopinath Madan Mohan, he's both the attractive feature and the proper attitude, because those two go together. If you don't have the right attitude, then your identity won't work. If you're proud of your identity, you won't work. That's why we're giving up. We're just servants of the Lord, the humble servant of the Lord. Then the attitude's right, the identity's right. Now you can make an endeavor. Now you can get a result. So it means all these modern things may make us aware that we have to look at some of these details, which is great. But the point is that you're dealing with somebody who is conditioned, who makes mistakes, who has imperfect senses, who is illusion, and their book's going to make everything work. And especially if you take corporate as the thing, who's qualified for corporate? You know, who's the businessman? Who's got the MBA? If you're either a businessman, you're running your own business, or you have an MBA, then we'll talk corporate. If you're not, then forget about it. You can't do it. That's like saying, well, I'll drive an, you know, I'd like to drive an F1 car. Oh, you have a license? No, I don't have a license. So, you know, you don't have a driver's license, a regular driver's license? No. So how are you going to get an F1 license? So that's the difficulty. It's this whole thing. Oh, anybody can do anything, be what you want to be, do what you want to do, like that. Well, that's from the 60s. Hippies. So we have to move on from this. We have to be practical and real that, yes, what you're able to do, that's what you do for Krishna. And all this thing is, no, everybody wants to be everything. No, you don't have to be. We only need one temple president. We only need one temple commander, one head pujari. But we need lots of brahmacharis. We need lots of pujaris. We need lots of preachers. We need lots of people doing other stuff. You know, there's a saying in English, too many chiefs, not enough Indians. You know, too many guys that think they're in charge and not enough people to get anything done. So one has to appreciate that one has to know that the Vedic system is the perfect system for establishing all these things. You can look at some details of how, okay, the Amish did this, but is any of those devotees in the meeting who won't call it Varnashram and they're quoting the Amish, are they going to follow any of those rules? They're the one, if you're not going to follow Varnashram because he won't use the word, you already have a problem with authority. You already have a problem with Shastra. You already have a problem with God's laws. So now, how are you going to follow all the rules they do? So which ones are you going to follow? You're not going to wear the beard with no mustache. You're not going to wear the overalls. You're not going to wear the haircut that they do. You know, you're not going to not use the car. You're not going to not use your iPhone. You know, you're not going to, you know, do all these things. You know, up to the age of 6, boys and girls don't mix at all. 16 to 18, they can kind of go out and be a little crazy, but they can't mix with boys and girls. And that, and only when they're mature and all that established, then they get married. Are we going to follow any of these things? No. We're already complaining, oh, the Vedic system. And then we say, oh, we got the Amish. Who's kidding who here? They're not going to follow any of that stuff. They won't even follow ours, and ours is so much nicer, so much more pleasant, so much more accommodating. And oh, that's fanatic, you know, but then we'll quote the Amish, or we'll quote the Mormons. The Mormons go out in a suit to preach. Literally, they all wear suits. They don't wear anything else. They only wear suits. You'll never see them in casual clothes when they go out and preach. Right? And they go out and go everywhere in the world for 2 years on their own money, nothing. Nobody gives them anything. 2 years. Like that. Not only that, they keep a stock of 3 years of food supply in their house, just in case anything goes wrong. You know, so they got enough food in their house that they qualify to do a soma yajna. You know? So are we going to do that? No. So that's the whole thing, is we quote these things like this just to distract from the Vedic, and then we don't use any, oh, but we'll just choose what we want, and that. So what, that's the whole point. I will do what I want and all that. So the point is if in the community, it has to be appreciated. Yes, we're an individual, but the point is we're all individuals as part and parcels of Krishna. So it's his laws that govern the universe. We follow his laws. Then as an individual, we will prosper and we will be able to function together as individuals cooperating together to do things to please Krishna. But this idea is that we will use someone else's system. Prabhupada said he already built the structure. We just need to fill it in. And even that, he told us how to fill it in. All we have to do is do it. But we're still, okay, well, you know, what's your vision, you know, for the future? Prabhupada already gave the vision. It's coming down from Lord Chaitanya, given by Rupa Goswami, on the path chalked out by Jiva Goswami. So it's already there. We just have to do it. You know, it's like I put a plate of food in front of you and then say, you know, eat. Well, you know what? You know, and then you turn to the guy next to you. What would you like to see to eat? What would you like to see on the menu? They don't eat. They just talk. Hence global warming. So the point is what you're convinced about, what inspires you in devotional service, talk about that. And if you're nicely read, you nicely read Prabhupada's books, you practice, then so many things that at any one point, there'll always be something inspiring.
That makes sense? Simple. Thank you so much, Maharaj. Okay. We still have 5 minutes. Anyone has some questions that they would like to ask Maharaj?
I mean, we'd like to speak a little about Charaswami, because we had an association with him, just to find out.
Bhakti Charuma.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the same topic, but it's...
It means that he is someone who, you know, is pious enough to be, you know, cultured. And then, you know, especially like for Steve from that kind of background, he and Bhakti Charuma and Subhag Maharaj, they're from that same Calcutta aristocracy. So Prabhupada told Subhag Maharaj in London, because Subhag Maharaj had gone to London to study. He studied law there, so he's a barrister. And so then he met the devotees, and he met Prabhupada and all that. And Prabhupada said, don't forget the things that you learned from your parents. You know, in other words, the culture, the behavior, and, you know, all the things that are proper etiquette, things like that. So he was always very careful to be cultured. And Bhakti Trumars then, he also had that culture. So he was able to deal nicer with everybody. You know, if there's a disagreement, he would get down, he wouldn't sit down with people, because it's personal. It's not about a management thing. For Bhakti Trumars, it's not a management thing. It's a personal thing. So he's a person. This other one's a person. They have a disagreement. So why are you doing? Why are you doing? And then try to work it out till it makes some sense that they both are on the same page. So it's not from some, you know, how to be an ombudsman, you know, book. It's about how to be personal and how to deal personally with people. And so you see, Bhakti Trumaraj is always like that. He was very much a person, very much followed the etiquette. People came, then he would, you know, deal with them nicely as guests, sit them down, he'd feed them, he'd talk nicely to them. He'd always take care of them. So these kind of aspects, this is our culture, and that's why Bhakti Trumaraj was so attractive and so special, is because he just followed our Gaudiya culture. He and Subhag, they just follow our culture. Oh, but this and that, and this, and that one, that. And, you know, as Tapas Prabhu was mentioning about the, you know, love and trust and all that, but they bring it in from this modern kind of mundane thing that doesn't work. But Bhakti Trumaraj just applied it from the traditional Gaudiya perspective. And that's what made it so special. Is because he had faith in Prabhupada, he had faith in the process. And, you know, to him, the culture wasn't foreign. He was following it from before, didn't know about devotional service. He was doing it because that's just how cultured Bengalis act. Then he came across the Prabhupada, then it becomes perfect because he sees how to apply it in Krishna consciousness. And you see, he was very dynamic. He could go anywhere and do anything in any place. It wasn't that he could only preach in India to the Indians. He'd go all over the place, all over the world. Very successful. Big, big projects. You know, could do so many things like that. So many devotees. And, you know, he was still just the same humble, you know, devotee who, you know, was very pleasant and very nice to be around. Like that. Put emphasis on cooking and serving and, you know, because Dadati prati grinati guhyamakiti prichati bhunkte bojayate chaiva. So, discussing philosophy, hearing about it like this and discussing with devotees, then confidential discussions with devotees and prashad with devotees, he would focus on those and he'd make them happen. And then we're asking, well, how do you make community? And this, it's these three things. That's community. You have to remember, if you don't have community in the temple, you're not going to be able to make community outside the temple. So if you don't have a nice group in the temple, then why does everybody want to listen to you about community? So if you can't create community with the people you're with, then how are you going to expand that and influence others? So that's the point. Charity starts at home. You start with a group there and then you see and take it out. It doesn't mean you don't go out and preach. It just means focus on getting it all right there. Then you know how to make it right there, outside. And then in the community, you're doing things you see there and it makes it work. Then you apply those in the temple and back and forth until you get something that's very nicely works in all situations with all the variety of people. You know, because some want to hear the philosophy. Some want to hear what's right and wrong. Some need to hear what's the benefits. Some need to be just that got kind of personal, you know, sentimental dealings. And then they're happy with that. So all these different kinds of mentalities are there. And so Bhakti Trumaraj, didn't matter who they were, Westerners, Indians, this, that, he could make the community work. Wherever he was, there'd always be some community. So it wasn't a separate endeavor. Just like Radhanath Maharaj, there's community. Why? He just uses the traditional Gaudiya ways of dealing in culture. And we got to do, you know, modern corporate, you know, how you say, boardroom way means. And then, but where's community there? They hate each other and everybody hates them. And then that's going to be our success? Never. community means it's personal. And the point is, no one's more personal than the Gaudiyas. So what we have ourselves, what is mentioned in Nectar Devotion, Upadeshamrita, that's, you know, Shikshastika, that's your method, that's your culture, that's what you practice, that's what you give. It's very straightforward. There's no, oh, something we don't know and some other, no, we have it right there, we just have to follow it. It's like, what is it, Prahlad Maharaj said, no, Dhruva Maharaj said, I was looking for broken pieces of glass when this jewel is right here in front of me. So be convinced. When Shatadanya Prabhu walked into the room, in Prabhupada's room, because he was, you know, one of the ones that would serve and do things. So he was just there with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, as soon as he walked in, Prabhupada just looked at him and said, are you convinced? You know, it's kind of like that. And then, you know, then they discussed and all, you know. So if you're not convinced about this process, you know, its goal, its process, its knowledge, its practices, you're not going to be able to convince anybody else that it's value. Remember, you get, you know, yogurt comes from yogurt, or money comes from money. You're convinced, you can make others convinced. That's the whole point. Shravana, you hear. Manana, you contemplate and practice it and understand it. Nididhyasana, you realize it. And then the fourth stage is make others like you. You value it, make others like you. Take them through the process, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. But if you're not convinced, you're not going to be able to convince anyone else. So you see, people aren't convinced about the Vedic culture. They're not convinced. They're very good at convincing others not to be convinced about it. But they can't convince anyone about it because they're not convinced themselves. So Bhakti Chur Maharaj, he had community. Therefore, he could expand and bring others into that community. He always seen with his god brothers. He's always interacting very nicely and things like that. So that's Krishna consciousness. That's our culture. Yeah. Jai. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And thank you to those who participated in the series. We hope that it has been valuable for all of you. So
we hope that maybe you'd like to do the session another time again, if you're comfortable with that.
Sorry?
I mean, if you think it's worth it, then maybe you can do another session at a later time like this.
Oh, yeah, that you just discussed that with Swami Radhika Mataji. She organizes the schedule.
Okay. Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krish